We're busy with the concept of being Makabal Yisurim Ba'Av, it doesn't have to do anything with Madraigas. Once again, you have to work out these definitions clearly and running through our. I'm not learning this up like a Gemara at the moment, but this is soon as you understood. He says, when it comes to Bechira, choosing to do this thing and not do this thing, or choosing not to do this and doing this, that requires levels. That's already what spiritual level you are. Someone who's on a higher spiritual level will have a more refined Nisoy. Kind of lower spiritual level will have a less refined Nisoy. That's Talmud Madragas. Kabbalah Yisurim has nothing to do with Bechira. We brought the mission to God and said, Kol Chatachai, you're living forced, you're not because you want to be here. And then for the Yisurim that come, you don't boyche to have the Yisurim or not. So it's got nothing to do with Dargas. You get cut, you get cut. The question is, how do you deal with it? How do you relate to it? What we have to do is, when we see bad things coming upon us, first of all, you have to do tshuva. That's number one. We're talking, this is all post. But the Gemara says, if you see the kind of person, you should check his deeds, and you should check out what he's done wrong. And if you can't find anything, you should go check out, maybe he's not learning properly. Because if you learn properly, you'll find that you did do something wrong. And do tshuva. And once you've done tshuva, there's Yisurim coming, so then you have to go and you have to recognize this is the best thing for me. That's all. You have to go and you have to inculcate it and internalize the fact that if this is coming from a Kosh Bochu, and he wants what's best for me, and as difficult as this is, and as hard as this is, ultimately this is the best thing for me. Right now it hurts, right now it's bitter, but you can never say it's bad. Yaakov's the one said to me. He said, well, my daughter's kiddishes. I said, Chavi's kiddishes, anyway, I've had it different. So you can say this is bitter, you can say it's bitter, but you can never say it's bad. Some medicine is bitter, some treatment is painful. You know, occupational therapy, physiotherapy, sometimes not so comfortable, but you know, why do you go through it? Yeah? Which reminds me, I've got to go to the dentist. That's sitting there with incredible toothache, and I probably forgot to go to the dentist. Sometimes you're just numb, you know? So, yeah, that's another way of dealing with your suit, just like, numb, you know? But having said that, that you've got to go and internalize it. That's the avoidia. The avoidia, the munna is going and intrinsic, you know, getting it into you that this is the best thing for me. And we said, the most important thing is, this doesn't happen overnight. This does not happen overnight. To work on imunah, to work on that kol ma'aravid rachman the top of it, and gamzul ha'tayva, and all these dargas of imunah and whatever, they don't come overnight. If it happens overnight, you should be very suspect that it's not real. Very, very careful. This is a void of sachai. That's what we're in this world for. In this world, to get to know Hashem more and more and more. So you suddenly get a wake up call and you know Hashem and everything makes perfect sense or whatever. So it's one of two things. Either it's false or it's going to get taken away very soon. It's giving you a little, like we spoke about the other day, it's giving you that bit of artificial inspiration and it's going to get taken away. Don't start living there because you ain't there. This is a lot of hard work. Okay. The bottom of Reish Ein Tes. Reish is alav lasiach das min amachshavas madua v'lama. The first thing you have to do, we're going to go through practical lochamas. How do you deal with these yisurim now? So the first thing you have to do is get rid of the thoughts why and how. Alav lachzo uleshanen. You have to go and repeat and learn. Al ein oid milvado. To go back to the sugya, which is the highest level a person can reach. Nefesh HaChaim says that if a person's living on this level, he's going to bring it. If a person's living on the level of Ein Oid Milvado, nothing can affect him, nothing can harm him. The famous Maaseh, the way the Brisker Rav escaped from the Nazis and whatever. Miraculous, miraculous story. His son was there. I heard it from my Rebbe, and Rav Pinkus, I heard it from his son himself. Rav Yosher Ber was there. Grossness's father learned by him, and the stories from the son who was there. Miraculous stories of what the Biskarov attained through being on the level of Einod Milvado. Even the Nazis were much nice to them. Nothing can harm you. That's number one. But we're trying to work on the fact of Einod Milvado. It's the first of the Yud Gimel Ikarim. Basically, they're not major darugas. They're the first of the most basic principles of faith of the Yid. That nothing happens out there without it being from Hashem. Everything that's going on in the world, including my suffering, comes directly from Hashem himself. The Fenema, Kel Imunah V'Ein Ovel, Tzadik V'Yoshu. He's a faithful God with no injustice. Tzadik V'Yoshu. righteous and straight, however you want to translate those words. Once again, it's a very hot sugya. Rebecca once gave a shiur on how do you have a warm, cuddly relationship? How do you live in the world of Einod Novodo with the guy that cooked up our shit? You get it? The other kasha? The Einod Novodo, the love and understanding that everything's from my good and whatever, you're going to bounce off the radar screen using Rebecca's lotion when you start thinking about, like, you know, let's think about our shit, for example. Hashem seems to do very nasty things. So how are you supposed to have a positive relationship with somebody who seems to be doing some very terrible things out there? It's a wonderful share worth looking at, listening to very, very carefully. Because if you don't get that clear, you're always going to trip on this. This stone you're always going to trip over. No matter how much you work and understand these things intellectually, emotionally you're always going to go back to, but hold on a second, this hurts. They're like, why is he being so horrible to me? That's the first thing you've got to get over when you deal with this sugya.
Yeah. Well, do we have to deal with this on a collective issue? Because for the person that died in Auschwitz, he died in Auschwitz. But in the long run, it's good for our generation or something like that. But for that person himself, it ended badly.
Not necessarily.
No.
How do you know?
Okay, at the point when he's about to be shot, whatever it is, he doesn't have Baruch Hashem.
We don't know what his necessities on what he needed and why he needed and whatever. We know one thing, there's a cloud that anybody dies because he's Jewish. He's killed because he's Jewish. He's a Kaddish Elo. He doesn't go through Gehenna, he doesn't need to go through any of the suffering of all the things. The person who dies because he's Jewish, even if he didn't, he was fulfilled in generation, I mean, all the stories or whatever, straight to Ganeda. Straight. Don't pause, go, don't nothing. It's a cloud. He's a Kaddish Elo. Every one of those Jews that died in the Holocaust, a Kaddish Elo. So we don't understand why they needed that cleansing process and whatever. There's some discussions from the Rabbonim, what you can say, what you can't say, what you're allowed to say, what you're not allowed to say. What would have happened if they not died? I'm not saying this is why it happened, but I'm just saying in terms of Mahalach, is that the generation had reached such a level that the only way to actually get them into Gan Eden was for them to die as Kadosh Elyon. Because otherwise everything would have been lost. In other words, they were matzil, the neshamas were actually matzil out of that furnace. We don't know, we don't understand, and especially that Holocaust was too big for us. Anybody here reconciled and dealt with all the traumas of the Holocaust and you know, come on, you know, 2,000 years of Jewish trauma, we're walking around with collective traumas. We haven't really dealt with it so well. But yeah, you have to deal with it. Since you know about it and since it's on your table or whatever, you have to deal with it as an individual and also as a member of Klal Yisrael. There's always the micro and the macro. And those two are always there, yeah. I'm just saying, just even intellectually, at an intellectual and an emotional level where those two places interface, I can know this perfectly. You don't want to sit up small. Chair, sit. You okay? Even if intellectually you can deal with it and understand it, it makes perfect sense to you, which it does. I mean, it's very posh. Intellectually, there's not a complicated subject. But where the resistance kicks in from is from, yeah, but hold on a second, that's all true, very good. But what I see is, hey, this guy's doing some, you know, seemingly very not nice stuff. Same as a kid. A kid knows intellectually that his father loves him and cares for him and everything's wonderful or whatever, right? But why is daddy being so horrible for me not buying me the bike I want? Daddy's doing something that seems to be horrible. Yeah. So even though the kid knows intellectually that daddy loves him and cares for him and wants what's best for him, but at the end of the day, dad's been horrible. So, you know. So when it's just a chocolate chip cookie, whatever, so the track record the kid has with the father is pretty big. So the chocolate cookie doesn't dent it. But even if you have a wonderful track record or whatever, suddenly Auschwitz comes along, that's like, you know, and your father throws you into a dungeon and, you know, whips you or whatever. You know, so then you stop doubting your the spirit that, hold on, this is for my good. It's hard to see where that's for my good. So you start getting into trouble. That's where the Nisayin is. That's exactly where the Nisayin is. That's the Rav Tetz, Moshe Shapiro's Mahalach in Imunah, being faithfulness. Following that approach, that Imunah means I'm being faithful to what I know. I mean, intellectually I know that this is true. But my experience is causing me to doubt what I know.
Well,
and therefore I'm going to be faithful. Imunah means I'm being faithful to what I know, even in the face of not knowing what's going on here. Very simple moshel that he brings. Very simple moshel. You get a tap on your shoulder tonight just before you're going to get a bed, and it's God himself, right? Forget about how you know it's God. You know 100% that this is God, right? You're going to have to just live in the hypothesis. I had a guy in the Sharia once who couldn't buy into that. Yeah, but maybe it wasn't God. You know, through the whole marshal, he couldn't grip onto the fact that you have to just pretend that you know it's God. No doubt. You have no doubt in your mind, right? The mom, she's standing there facing the universe, and he says to you, listen to me. Tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, I want you to dive down to Masada, to the Dead Sea there. There's a mountain. Have you ever been to Masada?
Yeah.
You've been to Masada, high mountain there, 3,000 feet. I want you to climb up to the top there, and I want you to go to a certain place there, you'll see whatever, and I want you to jump. Jump off the mountain, but don't worry, I'll catch you. I'll catch you. And God's asking you to do this, right? This is the most powerful spiritual spirit you've ever had. The creator of the universe himself is talking to you and telling you what to do. So what do you do the next day? You get up, you hire a car, you get onto Masada, you come to the top of Masada, and you stand on the edge of the cliff. Now do you jump? You look around. Hello? Hashem says, once more, can you do something? You really want me to jump? Now you know, intellectually you have no problem knowing that it's the right thing to do, right? So what's stopping you from jumping?
Maybe you're down.
There's an emotional, there's a tug of war going on here.
It's not just emotional, it's just the doubt.
What doubt? You have no doubt. Intellectually, you are 100% sure that the creator of the universe told you last night to jump, and don't worry, I'll catch you.
I don't think emotion would override that then.
Whether you jump or not, right, is not the question. Would it be hard? If God was standing there right now and says, hey, jump, I'm here, would you jump? Of course, that would be easy, the easiest thing in the world. But why do you jump? Because you have emunah, you have faith in what you know. You're faithful to what happened last night. On the basis of that, you jump. That's Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu, Hashem comes to him and says, I want you to take your son and kill him. It's the most insane thing that you could ever ask Avram Avinu to do. It's not the Rotzen Hashem that Yitzhak should die. Hashem says, that's not my Rotzen, he should die, but kill him anyway. And Avraham Avinu only does it because he's faithful to what he knows. He knows that his track record with Hashem is 100% tight. And if Hashem asks him to do something, he does it, even though it makes no sense to him whatsoever. Even if it means shattering his own inner understanding of who Hashem is. Doesn't matter. The Imunah is faithful to what he knows. It means we're never asked to believe anything blind. Imunah doesn't mean blind faith. There's nothing in this world for blind faith. A leap of faith means you're leaping to what you already have a pre-existing experience of, what you have a pre-existing knowledge of. Even Sinai, even the experience at Sinai, we have access to understanding intellectually that experience happened. There's so much evidence for the Sinai experience that we know that it happened. So we conduct ourselves today in an imunah way, meaning being faithful to what we knew intellectually to be true. Even though right now someone switched the lights off and it's pitch black. The Rambam describes it as walking through a dark, stormy night. Anybody who was awake last night had a good example of it. And you don't know where you're going. It's pitch black and there's a stormy night and you're blundering through the forest. You don't know what's going on, right? And suddenly the lightning goes. In that split second, you can see exactly clearly the path in front of you, right? And then the lights go off again. So you're walking now on the path based on what? On the knowledge you had with the lights on, even though now it's pitch black. That's called Imunah, the Rambam says. Imunah never means you wake up one day and you go, I believe. That's not Judaism. Okay. So, when suffering comes upon a person, Rahman al-Islam, the first thing you have to know is, Kaili Munna vein oval tadi fi yoshu. Zuhu eitzis ha-yetzah la-hapilis ha-adam la-makhshaveh shal-trunia k'neged bo-yroidam. It's the way of the Yetzer Hara to come and get a person to fall into thoughts of complaint against Hashem. Rak la'aka she'anefesh nocha misaris rucha yoichol adam lizboinan at lulagalat yosef yosef at kami yisurim elu hayu letovosim. First thing a person has to do is know this. If this is happening to me, it must be for the good, in order to avoid that initial war inside of him. Once he's calm and things go a little bit more settled, then he can go a little bit, start analyzing and looking at it and starting to understand how good really that suffering is for you. And sometimes you see it. Sometimes the Kosh Baruch Hu actually gives you a Pesach when you realize, Boch Hashem, I had that suffering. Can you imagine how bad it would have been had I not had that incident? You know, can you imagine what it would have been if I didn't have a flat tire? Yeah? God, I go for a flat tire. Boch Hashem, I had a flat tire. You know what could have happened if I didn't? I would have been on the bridge when it collapsed. Whatever, I'm just saying, you know, how many guys were on their way to the World Twin Towers and to go to work that day, and then had Yisurim and all sorts of Yisurim and couldn't get to work that day. Mm-hmm. The same as well, worked the other way.
An argument is about that, don't make the bridge fall down,
Hashem. Okay, well, once again, the bridge needed to fall down as well, but I'm just saying, yeah, Hashem should have kept me off the bridge without it. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. The Chesed Sometimes Hashem actually shows you, yeah, in just little examples, how he's functioning, so you can use that experience for all the other things where he doesn't show you what he's doing. You know, so sometimes you get a little insight into it. You're right, you can always go back and say, hold on a second, what do I have to have a flat tire for? Yeah, just don't have me have a flat tire, and you can let me sleep 5 minutes extra, and I could have missed it, then I could have missed it that way as well. No, you needed the flat tire, and the bridge needed to fall, and whatever. Why? We don't know. We don't know why. The Leshem says that's why there has to be a thing called Chiyas HaMaisim. It's one of the proofs of Chiyas HaMaisim. It's because the Chiyas HaMaisim, you'll understand why everything had to happen. He goes as far as to say you'll understand why every leaf had to fall off a tree when it fell off. You walk past a tree and you see a leaf falling off. What? That's just stump. That's stump. That leaf fell off exactly when you passed. You needed to see that tree, leaf falling off the tree. Why? You can't work that out. The Leshem. Rabbi Lashem's grandfather has a series of svarim called Leshem Shavu Vachlama, which is based on the names of the breastplate, the middle row of the breastplate, Pashas Bukude. A series of Kabbalah svarim. According to the Chofetz Chaim, he was the last of the great Mekubalim. Chofetz Chaim called him Richtige Mekubal. That's Rabbi Lashem Zayda. And so one of his svarim was that showed me that he says it doesn't make any sense. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and the world has never done the Rotzen Hashem, not for one night. The world has never gone to sleep once in the entire Bria, not even done the Rotzen Hashem. So like, what kind of business is Hashem running here? You know, what kind of businessman is Hashem? The Bria has never ever done the Rotzen Hashem. Hashem creates the world for 6,000 years, and it never ever listens to him. So what kind of meshugas is this? Show me one day in world history where everybody did what Hashem wanted them to do. Hasinai?
Except for man.
Hasinai? No, I'm not talking about we're not talking about the animal, they don't have a chira. We're talking about Klal Yisrael. The whole Bria went to sleep one night, having done the Rotzen Hashem. Never. But the night that Shlomo HaMelech dedicated the Beit HaMikdash, it was already a Zuga of Aveda in that moment. So Klal Yisrael at Hasinai was already the Chet HaEgel was already being brewed under the Chuppah. He brings down the whole thing, whatever. He says, therefore, there has to be Chiyas HaMaisim in order to show how everything is exactly the way it was supposed to be ultimately.
No, during the flood.
There was problems there as well. We see what happened when Noah came out of the ark. It wasn't a prophet. The Rambam says that Noah angered Hashem. He was the most righteous person then. He deserved to be saved over the end of the day. He saved Noah's study. But took an Avraham Avinu to upgrade to be a Yisrael. You know, I've been told here that we've run out of time, so. Okay.